Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 330. Welcome back to the show. This week on the program, we've got a few great articles, namely one from the Southern California Lodge of Research. And some of you know I do a presentation on the Rite of Memphis, specifically not the blending of the Memphis Mizraim, but just the Rite of Memphis and its development here in the United States and its subsequent demise. I found an interesting article that addresses the Rite of Memphis Mizraim, and I thought it was kind of cool. I like to explore and read about the different rites and read their degrees and these kind of things, so I do have a piece on that as well. And we also have illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison in this episode, who is going to give us another amazing segment of the Masonic Minute. Before we get started, just want to remind everybody out there, thank you for supporting this program. One of the latest ways you can help support this program, Brother Levi Banker of buybankersbest.com has created a new shampoo, and I got it and I love it. And it's like, normally I spend $20 on beard wash buying a conditioner and a shampoo. This is only $15 instead of the $20, and then shipping and everything. You use a promo code, it's shipped to your door for $17. Saves you $3. You support the show if you help by using the promo code WCY, clicking through our links, all that. So check that stuff out. It's really, really good. And let's get into the program. So let's just dive off the board, as it were, with the first piece, which is not terribly lengthy, but it is very interesting. It comes from the researchlodge.com, which is the Southern California's research lodge, and they have sort of a blog that's online that has some published articles, and I found this one, which I thought was pretty interesting. The Flower of Life, Where Masonry and Spirituality Meet, and this is by worshipful brother Keith Dayton. I have been asked to put a small paper together on a presentation I've been giving on the Flower of Life. I have to start by saying that I will be using the words spirit, consciousness, God, creator, all interchangeably within this paper. Whichever entity resonates with the reader, go along with it. So what is the Flower of Life? Well, here it is. It is more than just a picture. This is a pattern for creation in the universe. It is the basis of geometry, music, divine proportions, and every element known to man. No matter what place, planet, or time you are in, if you study sacred geometry, you will always come back to the Flower of Life, as it is the container of all other sacred geometry. It has been found in most civilizations and all over the world, including Turkey, India, Japan, and Italian art, including sketches from Leonardo da Vinci, who studied the Flower of Life's form and its mathematical properties. It has also been found in China, the Forbidden City, and various temples. The Chinese dragon, Fudog, it looks strong and really menacing, but have a look at what is under its paw. It's the pattern of the Flower of Life. Is he guarding some sacred knowledge, perhaps? It has been found in Israel, ancient synagogues, in the Galilee, and in Masada. The oldest reference to it is found in the 6,000-year-old Osirian temple in Abydos, Egypt. Author Andrew Monkman writes, quote, I believe the complete ancient Flower of Life is an interdimensional tool, a portal, a stargate, a window into what some call the interspace planes. Monkman, Sacred Geometry, Flower of Life, 9/26/2017, at the following web address. Listeners may find a link to the article in the show notes. Let's see how it formed, more importantly, and what it forms. How the Flower of Life is formed. This is difficult to imagine, but I would like you to turn off all the lights and be in a dark room all by yourself. I want you to imagine there is complete nothingness in the universe. Let's just dwell on that for a moment. Nothing exists. No stars, no planets, no atoms, no particles, no quantum mechanics, no God particle. You are floating in nothingness, represented here by the Eye of Horus. For us Masons, it reminds us of the statement, quote, In the beginning the earth was without form and void. A darkness was upon the face of the deep. Spirit gave rise to consciousness. Consciousness could not move up, down, left, or right. It had no sense of anything other than itself. So consciousness expanded itself to a perfect sphere around its middle. This is the first circle, actually a sphere, in the Flower of Life. You can do this yourself with a simple compass. You ever wonder where we get the term sphere of influence? As Masons, we are now reminded, quote, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, end quote. Essentially, this is the first stage in creation. I have created a space for to form myself. I now have the gnosis that it would be really cool to replicate myself, so keep my initial sphere intact, then move my consciousness to the outer edge of the sphere. The birth of recreation happened at that moment. Consciousness had created the heaven and the earth. This shape that has been formed in between is called the vesica piscis, which translates from Latin as the fish bladder. It resembles the conjoined dual air bladders found in most fish. The vesica piscis is used in a lot of religious art. In the same way, humans begin as a single cell and replicate from there. It takes precisely 33 mitotic divisions to arrive at our total cell count, an interesting Masonic number. You may all know this symbol, used almost exclusively today to denote membership in the Christian religion. The symbol once held a very different meaning. The custom of early Christians to communicate by drawing a portion of the dust was carried over from the practice of the ancient Pythagoreans, who discovered the shape's unique properties and made it an important part of their teachings. This is the sign of the fish. Spirit decides it is going to move again exactly one radius away, and we get the tripod of life, which includes the Holy Trinity. This movement and recreation of consciousness continues until eventually on day 6 is created the seed of life. According to some researchers, the seed of life is a symbol depicting the 7 days of creation in which God created life. Continue this process out to 13 spheres and you have the flower of life, which can be better visualized in 3 dimensions called the egg of life. Join up their centers and you magically get a cube. If we extend this out even further, we get an extended flower of life. The fruit of life symbol is composed of 13 circles taken from the design of the extended flower of life. It is the blueprint of the universe containing the basis for the design of every atom, molecule, structure, life form, and everything in existence. It also contains the geometric basis for the delineation of a special shape. If you draw a line from the center of every sphere to the center of every other sphere, you get Metatron's cube. Now I know this seems to have got very complicated very quickly, but as brothers, it is important to note the relevance of just who Metatron was and what he means to us. Archangel Metatron is considered in esoteric literature to be the voice of God, one of, or if not the highest archangel. He is depicted in ancient texts with the image of the cube that bears his name emblazoned on his chest or floating around him. Why should Masons care about Metatron? In the Bible, it identifies him as the angel that led the people of Israel through the wilderness after the exodus from Egypt. With reference to pillars of light and smoke, Metatron's cube, also considered a holy glyph used to ward off evil spirits. The 5 Platonic Solids. The 5 Platonic Solids are geometrical forms which are said to act as a template from which all life springs. The Platonic solids are 5 structures that are crucial because they are building blocks of organic life. These 5 structures are found in minerals, animated and organic life forms, sound, music, language, etc. The Greeks taught that these 5 solids were the core patterns of physical creation. 4 of the solids were seen as the archetypal patterns behind their 4 elements, fire, earth, air, and water, while the 5th was held to be the pattern behind the life force itself, the Greeks' ether. According to ancient and medieval science, Plato, ether, Greek, also spelled aether, ether, also called quintessence, is the material that fills the region of space, the region of the universe above the terrestrial sphere. Plato mentions that there is the most translucent kind, which is called by the name of aether, but otherwise he adopted the classical system of 4 elements. It was thought to make up the heavenly bodies. It was noted that there was very little presence of quintessence within the terrestrial sphere. In the 1980s, Professor Robert Moon at the University of Chicago demonstrated the entire periodical table of elements. Literally everything in the physical world is based on these 5 forms. In fact, throughout modern physics, chemistry, and biology, sacred geometrical patterns of creation are being rediscovered. So what else can we find out about the flower of life? How else does it interact with our lives and creation around us? Let's go back to the Vesica Piscis. Let's look at another revealing of sacred geometry from this most auspicious creation shape. Consider the rudimentary geometry from the Vesica Piscis. If we assume that the radius of each of these spheres has a dimension of unity, or 1, if we intersect some lines, we get some interesting numbers, including the square root of 3, the square root of 2, and finally, the square root of 5. These are all irrational numbers, meaning that they go on forever and are never resolved. Consider new the square root of 5. If you apply simple addition of 1 and divide by 2, you get an interesting question. This is known as the golden ratio, or phi. The golden ratio is found just everywhere in the world. It considers the Fibonacci sequence. This sequence and its merits are justified for another paper. Suffice to say that the examples go from the very small to the huge, from DNA to the nautilus shell, through body dimensions including human and non-human faces, all the way up to spiral galaxies. The DNA, BDNA, has two grooves called the major and minor groove, which are in proportion of 13 to 21 angstroms. The molecule measures 34 angstroms long by 21 angstroms wide, for each full cycle of its double helix spiral. If you look hard enough, you can find the Fibonacci series everywhere. Other shapes within the flower of life. Here we have the Kabbalistic tree of life contained within the flower of life. The chakras are also contained within the flower of life. Musical notation is contained within the flower of life. There is one more shape that is contained within the flower of life. It is one that is pertinent to Masons. It is known by many names, including wheel within a wheel, the chariot of fire, or the true chariot of the gods, as described in the Old Testament book of Ezekiel. This is said to be a divine light vehicle used by ascended masters to connect with higher realms. The Semitic form is called the stella octangula, or the star tetrahedron, or three-dimensional star of David. It also has another name, which is the Merkaba. I had the personal experience of going on a Merkaba meditation weekend. The meditation is to enable you to connect your energies with higher energies and spiritual beings in the higher dimensions. The Merkaba becomes a spiritual vehicle that totally surrounds you. It becomes part of your quote-unquote light body. We are all quote-unquote sons of light, are we not? It is a 17-breath meditation. First 6 balance the polarity, next 7 for proper pranic flow. Further breaths are used to shift consciousness and activate the Merkaba. Why should Masons care? We need to look at the similarity of a spinning Merkaba and another favorite shape of our craft. Consider the comparison below. Conclusions. I need to take you all back again to the Vesica Pisces. This is the particular reason why this whole paper is relevant to all Masons. If we take the line from the top of the second sphere to draw it through the dissecting line of the Vesica Pisces, then do the same on the other side. We then take a line from the middle of the second sphere to the bottom of the second sphere and do the same on the other side. You miraculously make a right angle at the bottom of this intersection, and by now you will recognize this shape. What is more fascinating is if we add the sphere back in and put our light consciousness back into the sphere, it becomes even more compelling. Have fun with a pair of compasses and see the magic unfold. We are all part of this mystic tie that can be unraveled by the simple square and compass. Enjoy your path, and may your God be with you. Worshipful Brother Keith Dayton. Well, there you have just a fantastic piece. Now, so I realized there were some images that you probably were trying to conjure up as we were going through this piece, and I would urge you to then go back and click on the show notes, click the link to the article directly, and see the other resources that are there. In addition, if you have further questions on the subject, I would highly recommend contacting Worshipful Brother. I know the Southern California Research Lodge is doing a wonderful job, and we thank them for all of their hard work. Next week, I'll actually be in Dallas, Texas for work all week, so it is my hope that Worshipful Brother Nick Johnson we'll be hosting the show next week, and we should have a pretty good program. So, all that taken in, and now we'll go into this week's Masonic Minute.
Rummaging through some papers last week, I found a note scrawled in longhand describing a brother's Masonic journey. This account started with the mundane tale of a farmer who wanted to become a Freemason. This simple story was informally jotted down in 1952 as a recollection of events that took place long before, shortly after the turn of the century. I thought it was worth sharing with you. Here is that farmer's Masonic tale. One day I was in the barn lot at home on the farm, discussing things with a cousin of my mother. I told him I was interested in masonry and hoped to become a Mason someday. This was in November 1908. A short time after, I received an application for membership. I signed it and was elected for initiation, which happened on February 9, 1909. I studied faithfully and was given the third degree on March 9, 1909. Shortly after receiving the third degree, the Grand Lecturer came to town to hold a lodge of instruction. I attended all 3 days and then accompanied the brother to other towns for more instruction, becoming proficient in all 3 degrees. I was elected Junior Warden in 1910. In 1911, I sent a petition to the Grand Master asking for the establishment of a Masonic lodge near my home. A lodge under dispensation was set up with myself as master, also under dispensation, in the spring of 1911. At the fall meeting of the Grand Lodge, the new lodge was granted a charter. I was elected master of the lodge. It was a very active organization and continued to grow. I became master a second time when the lodge was 4 years old, and then secretary. World War I came along and I went to France. The lodge hall burned down, destroying all the records, but the lodge continued to grow. When I returned from overseas after World War I, I took an active interest in Masonic affairs in the whole country. When the district deputy died, I was appointed to replace him in 1924. I entered politics in 1922 and was elected to office again in 1926 after a defeat in 1924. In 1930, William R. Gentry was elected Grand Master of Masons of Missouri. He appointed me to the Grand Lodge line, and in 1940, I was elected Grand Master of Masons of the Grand Lodge of Missouri. In the study of the Masonic lectures and the reading of the biblical references, I was impressed with the moral code taught by the lectures and the Bible. I always tried to live and act by this moral code. Signed, Harry S. Truman, The White House, Washington, D.C., December 31st, 1952. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, always fantastic. We thank illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison for his time and bringing us always amazing content. If you like his style and you like this kind of thing, please head on over to our website. Go to the bookstore and click on the links to his Amazon books and pick up any number of his books. They're fantastic, they're well-written, well-researched, and they always make us think. So, again, a huge thanks goes out to illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison. The next article I have for you is called The Rite of Memphis Mizraim. Now, of course, I've talked about this before in the past. I did an episode of the Masonic Roundtable in which I laid out the history of the Rite of Memphis as it traveled around and even gained a significant foothold here in the United States. This article comes from Skirit.com, and it is a collection of various Masonic writings that have been put in text form and are now in existence on this website. The Rite of Memphis Mizraim, History of the Rites of Memphis Mizraim. Historically, the Masonic obedience that celebrated its bicentennial in 1988 originated when the two rites of Memphis and Mizraim were merged in 1881 by Garibaldi, who became its first Grand Master. The Rite of Mizraim had been founded in Venice in 1788. Its filtration came through Cagliostro, who had entrusted it with the lower first degrees of the Grand Lodge of England and the higher degrees of German Templar Masonry. The Rite of Memphis was constituted in Montauban in 1815 by Freemasons who had taken part in the mission to Egypt with Napoleon Bonaparte in 1799. To these two rites were added initiatic degrees, which came from esoteric obediences of the 18th century, the primitive rite, the rite of Philadelphies, etc. During the 19th century, the Carbonis recruited members in Mizraim and Memphis. They had numerous lodges in France, and some of their dignitaries were very influential persons, such as the Duke de Cazio and the Count Mirar, who were both Grand Commander of the Scottish Rite. In France, the obedience is the meeting place of Masons who share an attraction for esoterics, hermeticism, symbolism, etc. There are about 90 lodges in France, not counting the higher degree workshops. In these workshops are a few hundred members, among whom we find Masons from all obediences who are most qualified in the field of esoterics. Some are even at the helm of the other, more secret organizations. The Rite of Memphis Mizraim perpetuates the tradition of attachment to the principles of tolerance and freedom of thought, which made it the refuge and recruitment ground of the Carbonis during the reign of the White Terror in the 19th century. The Rite of Mizraim. The first mention of the rite was in Venice, 1788. A group of Socinians, an anti-Trinitary Protestant sect, asked a patent of constitution from Cagliostro, who was then the Triste. He came to Venice and stayed for 6 weeks. They did not want to participate in the magical Kabbalistic rituals, so they chose to work the Templar Rite. So Cagliostro conferred their only Masonic light. He had the first 3 degrees of English Freemasonry and the higher degrees from Germany, which were greatly influenced by the Templar tradition. The name of Mizraim is the plural form of Egyptian, which is the only reminder of this Egyptian rite, which gave their obediential personality. It spread rapidly to Milan, Genoa, Naples, and appeared in France with Michael Betteride, who had received the Grand Mastery, Ultimate Powers, in 1810, in Naples from B. de La Salle. From 1810 to 1813, the three Betteride brothers successfully developed the Rite in France, almost under the protection of the Scottish Rite. Indeed, it had illustrious Masons at the helm. The court of Murar, Sovereign Grand Commander of the ancient accepted Scottish Rite, the Duke de Cazio, the Duke Saxe-Weimar, the Duke of Leicester, the Lieutenant General from Teste, etc. During the White Terror, Mizraim quickly became the Masonic obedience which transmitted the required third degree to the Carboni, and this group then had 22 lodges in Paris, 6 in Lyon, 6 in Metz, 5 in Toulouse, 3 in Bordeaux, 3 in Geneva, 3 in Larsum, and 1 in Curie. The police of the Restoration obtained its dissolution because it was fearsomely anti-clerical and anti-royalist. After being clandestine for 18 years, it was restored in 1838 and dissolved once more in 1841. Again brought out of the underground in 1848, Mizraim evolved towards its merger with the Rite of Memphis in 1881, which was the realization of Garibaldi. The Rite of Memphis. Most of the members who accompanied Bonaparte on the mission in Egypt were Masons belonging to the old initiatic rites, Philolades, African Brothers, the Primitive Rite, and all were Masons of the Grand Orient of France, having discovered in Cairo a Gnostic Hermetic survival, and in Lebanon the Druze Masonry that Gerard de Nerval had also met, and which dated back to the operative Masonry which had accompanied their protectors, the Templars. The brothers of the mission in Egypt decided to renounce the Masonic affiliation which had come from the Grand Lodge of England and to start again with a new rite that would owe nothing to England, who was then the number one enemy, and thus was born the Rite of Memphis in 1815 in Montauban under the direction of Samuel Harris and Marconi de Negre. As the Rite of Mizraim regrouped, and the Jacobites, who were nostalgic of the Republic and the Carboni, the Rite of Memphis very quickly regrouped their semi-retired of the ex-Great Army and the Bonapartists, faithful to the Eagle. The two rites, moreover, had the same Grand Master in 1816, a prelude to the future merger. But the Grand Orient was then monarchist in its majority. Its seal was comprised of the fleur-de-lis, and it succeeded in obtaining the dissolution of Memphis. But that did not last. However, in 1826, this rite took up its own work again inside the same Grand Orient. Dissolved in 1841, just like Mizraim, Memphis also became clandestine and returned from the underground only in 1848 with the advent of the Republic. Dissolved again in 1850, reactivated in 1853, Memphis joined the Grand Orient in 1862 because it was obliged to do so by a decision of the Prince President. With numerous lodges abroad, it had illustrious people within its ranks, such as Louis Blanc and Garibaldi, whose son became the Unifier of Memphis and Mizraim. The Rite of Memphis Mizraim. The Rite of Memphis and Mizraim, until 1881, followed parallel roads and even in concert in the same particular climate. Indeed, the rites begin to regroup Masons of the Grand Orient of France and of the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite who were interested by the studies of the esoterics of Masonic symbolism, Gnosis, Kabbalah, even Hermetics and occultism. Now these two rites had inherited and were the depositors of the old initiatic obediences of the 18th century, the rite of Philalethes, the rite of Philadelphia, the Hermetic rite, the Primitive rite, etc. And all this represented in Mizraim 90 degrees and in Memphis 95 degrees how to administer and use this ill-assorted ensemble. When Garibaldi was appointed the first international Grand Master ad vitam, the brothers abroad had not suffered the political persecutions like in France. A kind of classification was made which was not hierarchical in the beginning, but which quickly became such. In fact, the 95 degrees of the Rite of Memphis Mizraim should be considered an ambulatory where rests old Masonic degrees that are not practiced anymore, or very little, and not on a scale of values. Furthermore, the agreements of 1863 with the Grand Orient of France and 1896 with the Grand Lodge of Scottish Rite, which was to become the Grand Lodge of France, speak only of the classical 33 degrees, Rite of Perfection, followed by the ancient accepted Scottish Rite. The Memphis Mizraim higher degree workshops must work the 4th degree, Secret Master, the 9th degree, Master Elect of Nine, the 13th degree, Royal Arch, the 14th degree, Grand Elect of the Sacred Vault, the 18th degree, Knight Rosecroix, the 28th degree, Knight of the Sun, the 30th degree, Knight Kadosh, the 32nd degree, Prince of the Royal Secret, and the 33rd degree, Sovereign Grand Inspectors General. The 66th degree, Patriarch, Grand Consecrator, is conferred only to certain brothers who could be called upon to act as consecrator, and a certain particular preparation is required. Some have compared it to an episcopal consecration. The 87th, 88th, 89th, and 90th degrees comprise what is referred to in textbook as the Arcana Arcanarum. Those who are admitted to the 95th degree become the protectors and conservators of the rite as their name, Patriarch Grand Conservator, indicates. It is among them that the International Grand Master chooses the members who serve on the International Sovereign Sanctuary Supreme Governing Body of the rite. Additionally, the 66th, 90th, and 95th degrees may be conferred on Masons in recompense for their valor, their knowledge, and their fidelity. The 95th degree confers upon them the right to sit on the Council of Sages in their quality as Grand Conservator of the Rite. Other degrees, such as the Royal Arch, are not mandatory and are left to the choice of the brothers. Knighthood, chivalry, is transmitted to certain brothers with the 20th degree, Knights Templar or Knight of the Temple, descended directly from the ancient strict Templar observance, and the Knights Beneficent of the Holy City of Jean-Baptiste Wilmermoz. The lodges of Memphis Mizraim work the Egyptian rite. On their altars, they add the traditional interlacing of the compasses and the square, the rule symbol of the Grand Architect of the Universe and of Divine Law. Since March 1990, the President of the National Council elect ensures the admission of all the Blue Lodges of the Rite in France and in the associate countries. On May 10, 1991, the French Obedience was admitted into the Centre of Liaison and Information of the Masonic Power signatories of the Call of Strasbourg, or CLIPSAS. Thus registering its actions on the sides of European and liberal Freemasonry. The Rite of Memphis Mizraim perpetuates its traditions of fidelity to democratic principles and to the initiatic sciences. That's it. I hope to have you join us next week when we have a special guest host. I'd invite you to please check out the show notes and click on the links to check out those lodges of research. Please do not forget about the Masonic Roundtable, which goes live every Tuesday at 10/9 Central. I will be absent this week. Again, I'll be in Dallas for work. We'll have three new pieces up this week for the Midnight Freemasons. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Every single week we publish new Masonic content. And of course, on Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, we've got the Masonic Curators. So we'll have those videos up as well. Please, if you're feeling up to it, consider supporting the show. Go to wcypodcast.com, hover over support the show, click make a donation, and you can assist this show. You become a producer, and we have different levels of contributions, and we appreciate everything you do. It keeps this show running, it keeps the archive up, it pays for the website, it pays for making all the episodes always available, and so much more. So thank you all so much. And I'll talk to you in just a few weeks, actually. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.